famous dinosaur that never lived. Who was the most famous? The Brontosaurus. Remember Fred Flintstone? They had Dino the dinosaur, and they always ate Brontosaurus burgers. Brontosaurus has never lived. The Brontosaurus was thought to have lived, but then they realized that they had the body of a Apatosaurus and the head of a Diplodocus. And so once again, this shows us how inaccurate that what we think of established science can be when it comes to an area that we really know very little of. As we think a little bit more about it, how big were the dinosaurs? Usually we think of them as being enormous, and we've touched on that already in the introduction to this, but not all of them were that large. The average size, about the size of a small pony or large sheep, as we've already mentioned. The Sizosaurus and Argentosaurus, which was only fairly recently discovered, as the name implies, in Argentina, were over 100 feet long and weighed 100 tons. That's pretty big. But you know, as big as some of these were, none of them have ever been as large as the biggest animal we ever know about that's still alive, the blue whale. 200 tons. But we're impressed by the largeness of these other animals that God created. And when you look at some of the animals God created and you wonder why He created this and that, you know, sometimes you look at some animals, you know, well, this animal eats this animal, and it keeps that animal in check, and you don't want to upset the balance. We've seen what it did by taking rabbits, for example, to Australia. Now, that just devastated their ecology down there. So there is a system that God has in place of animals keeping each other in check. But sometimes you look at some animals, the only thing you say about it is, wow. You know, that God created this just to have man looking at it and saying, that's amazing. That's an amazing aspect of God's creation. And we're going to see that in the book of Job a little bit later, that was Job's comment about some of God's creation also. Yeah, the Supersaurus, 100 tons, 130 feet long. Ultrasaurus, 100 tons, 100 feet long. Brachiosaurus. Tyrannosaurus, as far as some of these large ones, it was actually pretty lightweight, was the 8 tons, 20 feet tall. Especially when now, you know, typically when you go to the museums and you see the Tyrannosaurus and he's standing up big and tall, now they think he was actually down almost on all fours rather than standing up. Somehow he didn't seem that big and tall and ferocious when he's down versus upright. Africanopithecus, 5 tons. In the scheme of things, not that much smaller than the Tyrannosaurus, and yet still living. But we're enamored and impressed with these others that aren't. Somebody says, well, could it? Dinosaurs only have fit on Noah's Ark? Or is that a strike against the Bible? Little boy asked what it means when the preacher took off his watch, said, not a thing. Let's think about Noah and the ark. Turn over with me in the book of Genesis. Genesis chapter 9. There's going to be several things that we want to look at concerning the flood, the ark. Genesis chapter 6. In verse 17, Job said, behold, I myself am bringing flood waters on the earth to destroy from under heaven all flesh, which is breath of life. Everything that is on the earth is going to die. Here was the greatest mass extinction that the world has ever seen. When they're doing archaeological digs or geologic samples, they will often come into areas in which they'll simply say, we have no explanation. But here will be mounds of various types of dead animals, of the fossils of these animals. In the Gobi Desert of Mongolia, just a couple of years ago, they began researching an area. They said, The Gobi Desert was once underwater. Well, the whole earth was. Including apparently Mount Everest, 5.5 miles high. So yeah, the Gobi Desert was underwater. But what they were called the killing fields in the Gobi Desert. They couldn't understand why were there these large heaps of fossilized remains of animals. But you see, it makes perfect sense if water's sweeping everything away and it gets piled up against something that begins catching the other ones. That makes perfect sense and fits in with the Bible model very clearly. So does finding fossils of sea life on mountaintops. Now, since this was the command of God to Noah to take, as it says in verse 19, of every living thing of all flesh, you should bring two of every sort on the ark, keep them alive with you. They should be male and female, birds after their kind, and animals after their kind, and every creeping thing of the earth after its kind. Two of every kind will come to you, and you keep them alive. You'll take yourself of all food that is eaten, and you shall gather to yourself, and it shall be food for you and for them. And Noah did according to all that God commanded him. So he did. Now, was it two of everything that was taken? What was seven taken up? Clean. If we try to ask for an explanation why seven, because that leaves an odd number, well, what did you sacrifice? A clean or unclean animal? So you would have found one for a sacrifice. Or somebody says, well, maybe it didn't mean seven, it's seven pairs. Okay? You think Noah knew what it meant? And that's what's important. God's speaking to Noah. We're listening in on this conversation. And Noah understood what it meant. And apparently Noah's able to have conversations with God, so if there was any lack of clarity on Noah's part, it certainly could have been cleared up. As he's bringing the animals into the ark, then the question again is, but was there room on the ark? Here is in comparison, the ark is not a boat. You know, you go to the Walden's bookstore and some of the quote Christian bookstores, and you see the little toy models of the ark, and then they look like cute boats, and Noah and the animals are on top of them. They're on the deck and all that sort of thing. But when you look at the description of the Bible, it was really a barge rather than a boat. And this large barge, you can see the comparison of an Apatosaurus and a school bus over to the left of them, and then railroad boxcars in comparison to the size of the ark. And so you're talking about a large moving barge with these kind of descriptions when we take the cubits and bring them into our system of measure. The ark was 450 feet long, 75 foot wide, and 45 feet tall. And you see the comparison to a football field out the side of it. How can Noah put all the big dinosaurs in the ark? That's not insurmountable either. Since Genesis 6:20, Job had said of the living things, two of every sort. If it says every sort, would the dinosaur be one of every sort? And if so, then surely the dinosaurs were also commanded to be in the ark. But not all dinosaurs were big. The majority were small. In fact, some were quite small. That would have been an issue then to have taken the small ones on there. This one's high 24 inches and weighed 8 pounds. There are a lot of animals bigger than that today. And yet this is defined as a terrible lizard. Dinosaur. I would think a 12-foot African crocodile is a more terrible lizard than this thing, don't you? Or a 500-pound Komodo dragon? Yeah, a lot worse than this. The dimensions that would be given in the Bible would give us about 140,000 square capacity feet on the ark. That's about the equivalent of 569 railroad boxcars. Somebody has done the math. I didn't. Since there are 638 named dinosaurs, but only 55 kinds, there's different varieties of those same kinds. And then if you allow for extinction of animals since then, about 35,000 animals. That means you could fit in 150 boxcars or less than one-third of the ark, with food and water taking up about another 25% of the ark, leaving really the majority of the ark for food and Noah and his family and provisions for them. Somebody says, well, you know, if there really were such a thing as dinosaurs, wouldn't the Bible be talking about it? Not necessarily. Do you read of every animal that's even alive today in the Bible? No. But you do read a couple of animals that there's a pretty amazing description that's given in the book of Job. And if your Bible has footnotes can be helpful. But remember, a lot of those footnotes also say that Mark 16:16 is not Moses' best manuscripts. And so footnotes can be rather deceiving. Footnotes that are placed about these animals were put there in the 1700s. When did we say the fossils of dinosaurs were discovered? 1822, and not even given the name of dinosaur until 1841. So you could not ask somebody thousands of years ago, is that a dinosaur? And get a yes. Because that term was not even made up until 1841. But we do read of a couple of amazing animals in the Bible. And it doesn't sound like anything we have today. Your Bible may have a footnote, if it's like some of those, that will say possibly crocodile, possibly hippopotamus. But some aspects of it sound like it, but not when you look at the entire description of the whole thing. For example, in the book of Job chapter 41, we read about a creature called a Leviathan. Turn to your Old Testaments, the book of Job. What time does the first bell ring about, Sam?
11:10
works for me.
I forgot I'd already changed my watch.
Job chapter 41. And let's start with the first verse. Can you draw out the Leviathan with a hook? Or snare his tongue with a line which you lower? Can you put a reed through his nose or pierce his jaw with a hook? Will he make many supplications to you? Will he speak softly to you? Will he make a covenant with you? Will you take him as a servant forever? Will you play with him as with a bird? Will you leash him for your maidens? Will your companions make a banquet of him? Will they apportion him among the merchants? Can you fill his skin with harpoons or his head with fishing spears? Nearby, we may say, possibly crocodile. And yet, crocodile skin and crocodile meat and crocodile teeth was used throughout Africa and the Middle East. So even though some aspects of this so far could sound somewhat like a crocodile, notice he's made it mockery where he says, oh, will you catch him? Will you use him? And they did, for crocodiles. I always laugh at this verse 8. Lay your hand on him. Remember the battle and never do it again. Indeed, any hope of overcoming him is false. Shall one not be overwhelmed at the sight of him? Remember earlier we were saying that some of God's creation seems to be just for the purpose of sitting back and just going, wow, God did this. No one is so fierce that he would dare stir him up. Who then is able to stand against me? Some look at this, though, and say, well, this couldn't really be a literal animal. But why would God use a non-literal to illustrate? It wouldn't make sense. I will not conceal his limbs, his mighty power, or his graceful proportions. Who can remove his outer coat? Again, you do of alligators and crocodiles. Alligator shoes, crocodile shoes, alligator breeches, and so on. Who can approach him with a double bridle? Who can open the doors of his face? Then the clenching of his jaws with his terrible teeth all around. His rows of scales are his pride. Shut up tight as with a seal. One is so near another that no air can come between them. They're joined one to another. They stick together, cannot be parted. His sneezes flashes forth light. His eyes are like the eyelids of the morning. Out of his mouth go burning lights. Sparks of fire shoot out. Smoke goes out of his nostrils as from a boiling pot and burning rushes. His breath kindles cold, and a flame goes out of his mouth. Some of this, again, even Christians say, well, this has to be metaphorical because it talks about him being fire-breathing. And we know there were there's no unicorns, there's no fire-breathing dragons.
Are you?
Ever heard of the bombardier beetle? Bombardier beetle is an amazing part of God's creation and drives evolutionists batty. Wouldn't it be wonderful to be an all-powerful being with a sense of humor? Evolutionists can't explain this. How did they not blow themselves up before they evolved? The bombardier beetle has a couple of little tubes on their backside that sprays out two different kinds of chemicals, and when it does, you have sparks of fire. Now, it's not only that those little venturis are aimed just right so that it goes just past them so that it attacks their enemies and doesn't blow their backsides off, but they still couldn't figure out how. One of the other known laws of science is for every action, equal and opposite reaction, right? Newton's third law, something like that. How does it not push him away? Scientists only have realized that he doesn't shoot it all at once, but it's very rapid fire, little mini bursts. Thousands of times a second. Once again, how did they evolve to that before they blew themselves up? You can't explain it. But if you can have an insect that causes a spark and an explosion, could we have had something larger that could have done that? And why not? In Job chapter 40, there's another creature that's talked about. Job chapter 40. Look, starting in verse 15. Here's a creature that's also mentioned in the book of Psalms, the behemoth. Your footnotes may say possibly hippopotamus or rhinoceros. Look now at the behemoth which I made along with you. He eats grass like an ox. Okay, that's good. See now his strength is in his hips. Possible. Power is in his stomach muscles. He moves his tail like a cedar. You're saying a little windshield wiper that hippos and rhinos have? They don't move their tail like a cedar, do they? The sinews of his thighs are tightly knit. His bones are like beams of bronze. His ribs like bars of iron. He is first in the ways of God. Only he who made him can bring him near his sword. Once again, God calls upon Job, look at my creation, be in awe by it. Surely the mountains yield food for him, and all the beasts of the field play there. He lies under the lotus tree. Well, not the hippo. He likes to wade around the water. In a covert of reeds and marsh. Well, that could fit him. The lotus trees cover him with their shade. The willow by the brook surround him. Indeed, the river may rage, but he is not disturbed. He is confident, though the Jordan gushes in his mouth. Though he takes it in his eyes, or one pierces his nose with a snare. When you take in the totality of this creature, it doesn't sound like anything that we're aware of today. And yet, here's two amazing creatures that are talked about in Scripture. Behemoth and Leviathan. We put all these together, the moving his tail like a cedar, his bones are strong as brass, bones like bars of iron. He is the chief of the ways of God. But here's a tale of one creature, though, that could seem to fit. Would it be an elephant? No. Again, kind of puny tail for an elephant compared to the rest of his body. Not a hippo, but certainly could fit some of the descriptions of dinosaurs, could it? Well, what about dinosaurs and people? If humans and dinosaurs coexisted, we've already suggested, number one, you would expect the Bible to talk about something that large. I don't believe the Bible does. But wouldn't we also expect there to be some sort of evidence that humans and dinosaurs coexisted, and yet we know that dinosaur fossils are in these lower stratas and humans are in the higher stratas when it comes to the layers of rock. Well, there's actually a number of traditions throughout indigenous people all over the world that talk about large creatures that's somewhere in their memories. Ancient drawings, 1800s, they discovered these petroglyphs in Chupai Canyon in Arizona. Now, they are outlined to make it a little more clear, but they certainly seem to depict something rather dinosaurish looking. They have Chupai Canyon in Arizona, once again, of another creature. And the problem is, when you look at these layers in rock, as we talked about toward the beginning, the assumption is that these are laid down slowly over millions of years, just like the water erosion came. So that happens slowly over millions. Well, instead of happening slowly over millions of years, could it happen rapidly in a short time? And could the layers have been laid down rapidly in a very short period of time? They've named each of these stratas with an assumption that there is a time period involved. Now, not all scientists believe this, but the majority do. The ones that are uniformitarians, who believe that the world has always existed as is, everything has happened, has happened over a slow period of time, there's never been any major catastrophes that have changed the face of the earth. And they do believe that each of these strata represents eons of time, so that things that were in the Cambrian strata are much, much older than those in the Pennsylvanian strata, for example. You've heard of the Jurassic period, in which dinosaurs are believed to have lived and roamed through the Paleozoic, Mesozoic, and Cenozoic, when man supposedly first came on the scene. The dinosaurs were finally extinct 65 million years before that. That's the basic model that's taught to your children in history books and science books. But those fossils from those time periods, rather than happening slowly over millions of years, how do you explain things like this? That in those fossils, you have a fish that was covered up and fossilized in the process of eating another fish. Did that happen slowly over millions of years to cover him up and fossilize it? Why didn't he rot away during that time? Or the fact that you have human shoe print with a trilobite in the heel of it. Trilobites, which supposedly lived during that period that the dinosaurs lived. In Genesis 7:11, what we do read is that in the 600th year of Noah's life, the second month, the 17th day of the month, the same day where all the fountains of the great deep broke up and the windows of heaven were opened. So not only did you have the rain coming down from above, but you had an upheaval from the earth itself. All the silt and dirt and rock covering up the earth that then existed. It's no wonder you dig down, you find sedimentary layers with things that were less mobile, like trees, large animals on a bottom layer, things that were lighter and more mobile could get away at the last minute toward the top. With that great upheaval, and then the weight of that water. You heard of the Marianas Trench, that they can't even send robotic divers down into because of the great weight of the water pressure that were crushing when it goes down. Imagine enough water on the earth to cover Mount Everest 5.5 miles up. What kind of pressure would that have put to fossilize and to encapsulate anything that was under all this weight of water? How else would you explain such things as, this is called Holly Strait, it's in Cookeville, Tennessee. Here is a tree that is still vertical. And yet you have supposedly millions and millions of layers of deposits going all the way up it. Did that tree then live to be millions and millions of years old? Or was it covered up very quickly, very rapidly? Here you have some interesting layers. See, these layers of rock are swirled. And I like to point out, especially young people, when they talk about the geologic timetable, and they make it sound like it's very clearly these different named layers. Nowhere in the world are they laid out like it is in the geologic column that you have in your textbooks. In some places they're completely reversed, some the other way. They're never in those exact layers. There's an assumption that this animal's in it, it belongs down here, and they put it that way. That geologic table was never found anywhere like it is in the textbooks. But doesn't that look like it's swirled, as in water? Same here. What happened to dinosaurs? Well, according to evolution, they evolved into birds. Giant dinosaurs evolved into birds, at least some of them. Others were killed out because of the meteor, you know. Well, let's think about this. After the flood, man begins eating meat. Now, they may have eaten it beforehand, but God specifically tells Noah, now, you know, the animals are for you and your family. You've got a world in which there hadn't been much, there's going to take a while to get farming going again after the flood. Here's a ready source and ready supply, and something that you kill one, you can feed the whole tribe for quite a while. If it were not for conservation, wouldn't a large number of animals today be hunted out for predation? Sure. That's why when you buy your deer stamp, you're given a bag limit. We know how many are necessary to thin out the herd so that there's not much competition, and yet keep it. It was thought for a while that buffalo were extinct in North America. Were not for a limitation of a lot of animals. In fact, even today, aren't animals becoming different animal species extinct every year? And then we find out later maybe they weren't, but you find them somewhere else. But I'm trying to say that it's not unusual for animals to become extinct, especially animals that would apparently live that long, yet that large, be relatively easy to hunt. But are we so sure that they have more recently lived? Angkor Wat Temple in Cambodia. Here's something that was built about 800 years ago. What is that carved around the temple? Tell me that doesn't look like a Stegosaurus. Or in Peru, Incan pottery. Sure looks like it. Biloxi River Glen Rose. This is not in the park. This is at the McFall Ranch. My wife and I took the family when the Biloxi River hit dry 10, 12 years ago. the patent trail had just been uncovered. They brought in excavating equipment, broke up rock. There was no chance. It was chiseled in. It was forgery. Hundreds of people were there. It was filmed live as they began removing solid rock with equipment and uncovered 120 SAR pad tracks with human footprints side by side and into the dinosaur tracks. You know, every culture has had legends about dragons. Remember, our word dinosaur, only since 1841, it means dead fossils. Every culture's talking about dragons. You ever wonder where they came from? Behind every legend, there's usually some validity, some element of truth to it. Especially if they had some element of fire breathing that we talked about from Job chapter 40, St. George the Dragon statue. Coelacanth, the living fossil, thought to have lived and died during the time of the dinosaur. And lo and behold, here's a woman swimming with the school of four of them. And you know, if there's four, there's going to be more. But here's a fossil of them from the same rock strata the dinosaur bones were found in. So is it totally impossible that they haven't lived in relatively recent years? Or the world really is a big world after all. Could there still be some left? Komodo dragon? This was caught by Japanese fishermen in the 1980s. They had to let it go because they were in a typhoon. They took samples of tissues, that they took careful drawings of it. The Japanese believed that it was a plesiosaur and even issued a stamp to commemorate it. The fact of the matter is, the Bible declares that dinosaurs are a testimony to God's greatness. Read Genesis chapter 1, have full faith in the author of it who was there, who knows what happened when man wasn't. Thank you for your time and attention this morning.